Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This week, we want to open with some listener questions that were submitted to us, and some pretty interesting questions. I like these. Donald, why don't you go ahead and share the questions that we received with our listeners?
The first one is kind of interesting and touches on some of the things we've talked about in the past. And it says, if I think bad thoughts because I'm superstitious about if I think bad stuff, then good stuff will happen, and it does for me. I find that kind of interesting because can you actually be a negative person and have good things happen to you?
Well, can you be negative and have good things happen? I think everybody has bad and good things happen to them. Everybody does. Every single day, every single moment, we have either something bad or good. And then you have to think that what's bad to one person is good to another. So it's all really subjective if you think about it. The thing I find interesting about this is, and I've heard this before, I know someone who is telling me that they were going on vacation and they were saying, well, I'm kind of concerned about this happening and I'm kind of concerned about that happening and I'm worried about this happening. And I tried to tell the person to think positively and the person says, the problem is if I think positively, something bad is going to happen. So what I do is I always think the worst and then things come out okay.
So what's actually going on there?
I think it's people wanting to see things in a pessimistic light, because it's more comfortable for them. And I think the main reason is so that they feel prepared. They feel more in control that if I think something negative and it makes a positive thing happens, that's great. But if a negative thing happens, then I wasn't caught off guard and I knew it was going to happen and then I could be more prepared for it. Well, it doesn't make it suck any less.
Oh, kind of like parents taking you to Disneyland and like, we're going to Disneyland, yay! But we're not going on any rides, we're not taking any pictures with any of, Donald or Mickey or anybody else. And like, oh. And kind of like the idea of, hey, we're going to Disneyland, well, the food will probably suck, probably won't get to take any pictures with anybody. And then you go and all of a sudden it's just like, yay, that was fun.
Yeah, maybe so. I think there might be an element to that. But I think, yeah, there is, if you build an expectation of how things will work, I don't think things always work that way, but I think you have a particular rhythm that you get in, and I think things work along that rhythm. I think what, the other thing too is I think what people really, really want is sometimes different than what they tell themselves they want.
I see it differently as pretty much the emotional state, the absolute subconscious state, if that's primarily positive, then positive things will happen. Even if you're thinking negatively, that's kind of my take. Because to me, from a lot of stuff that I work with and a lot of stuff that I do and the research that I've done over the years, it's just like the subconscious is in charge like 90-95% of the time. So if your subconscious is confident and able to see things as something that you can do, something that you can accomplish, something that, whatever you want to do, it's like, oh yeah, I can do that. Even if your conscious mind is sitting there going, that'll probably work or it might not, and oh well, whatever. So for me, that's kind of the take I have on it.
Well, then why is it like the person that posed the question had said they're superstitious about thinking thinking bad stuff, good stuff happens? Isn't that counter to that idea?
It's probably a safeguard that goes right along with what you're talking about, and what I'm referring to can live really happily with what you said, with what you said about it earlier, where there is a matter of not getting your hopes up, then you can never be disappointed. At the same time, if things do happen that really surprise you, even when, if you don't have your hopes up and then things really turn out really, really well, then you can actually enjoy life even more because in some respects, if you have this perspective, you can have this whole idea of, see, I went to Disneyland and I was thinking, my feet are going to hurt from walking all around. And, if I take the kids or if I take my cousins or if I take, whoever, we're going to have to take care of that. It's going to be expensive. And then all of a sudden you get to Disney World and you get to be invited back to their imagination studio and see how all things work. And you probably are able to do that anyway, but I'm just making stuff up, where you actually see the behind the scenes things that a lot of people don't get the opportunity to see. And then you go home and you're telling your friends, it's like, yeah, I thought it, you know, it'd be all right, you know, it'd be kind of an enjoyable experience, but I wasn't expecting it to be like, you know, insert bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Right. So, and then that gives an opportunity for kind of an adrenaline endorphin rush of, yeah. And then you're always having that control drama of, you know, hey, if I always see things as negative, then when they really turn out really well, I have a really good story to tell, even though you'd have the good story to tell regardless.
That makes sense. I like that.
So, and I think we're going to move on to the next part. They go on to say, is that essentially me controlling my destiny?
Yes.
There you go. I think exactly.
I think we answered that part of the question. I think it was just kind of the tag to that original question. Yeah, I think that they're wanting to know, am I having an effect on that, or is it actually just work that way? So, but I would say that, yeah, they're actually controlling it.
Yeah, because I think in our episodes on the law of attraction and destiny and karma and all that stuff, you know, what you put out is what you bring to yourself. So whatever you're putting out, that is what you're bringing back to you. And since we have those episodes on, I don't think we need to go much further into that. The last part is, how can our thoughts control machines, like getting in a car and then it breaking down?
You know, that one sounds a lot like the episode. I don't remember the episode number, but I think it was called Messages for Myself. It was the one where we talked about how our inner landscape can actually manifest symbolically into the external. In fact, we probably used the car analogy in that one, and I don't know if he had kind of picked up on that or if that's something that happened to him or her. I don't know. I think it's a really interesting tie to that episode.
So I'm curious, how can our thoughts control machines? I'm going to let you take the lead with this.
There is the idea of thought forms. There's the school of thought that thoughts are things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say thought forms. Thoughts are things is a little too, it's not easy for people to wrap themselves around, but I would say thought forms. Thought forms, imagine when you take a breath out, there is that air that you expelled from your lungs, and that air may carry bacteria. It may carry a temperature from your body. It may carry viruses. It may carry, you know, this and that. It may carry actually the scent of garlic. Well, thought forms do the same thing. You think these thoughts and they take shape and form in the non-physical realm. Now, even though you can't touch them, you can't see them, they still have a vibration. And like we talked about in the very last episode when we were talking about how things vibrate with one another.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it's on par with that, is that those thoughts and the vibrations of those thoughts can match or be in harmony or disharmony with a physical object or a machine. In fact, when I worked for Kinko's, for those of you who are not familiar with Kinko's is a high-volume copy place. It's now owned by FedEx. And I used to work there, and I worked on one of these huge machines, these giant, giant Xerox machines. And the people who swore at those machines or who worked on them in a really bad mood, the machines tended to break down more.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the correlation. It just happened. It happened. Have you ever known people that no matter what kind of car across the board, they always have cars that break down?
Oh, yeah.
Or people who there's a vibration where they always have their cars getting broken into, or certain things happen. I mean, there's people who's can't use computers because their electromagnetic frequency interferes with that. And I think it has a lot to do with that. That's my take.
You know, it's very interesting. I've known people that really, really love cars and working on cars, and their cars are always breaking down. Going with that whole vibrational match thing, it's like, well, if their cars are always breaking down, then they're always giving themselves something to work on that they absolutely love to work on.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good. I could see that.
Kind of like a reverse way of doing it. Kind of like if you really love working on computers, then and you always have your computers breaking down, then you always have something to do that you really love doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for me personally, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, But if I sit down at the computer and I get in a bad mood from, you know, watching something or reading something on you know, that's very negative or whatever, and it really affects me and pushes my buttons, I've noticed, especially in the past year, that my computer will say, okay, you're done for the moment. And what it will do is, if I try to go to a different page or something like that, the internet will hang, and it'll sit there just like loading, 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 and then it'll say, I'm sorry, it's taken too long to load this page. Did you really want to go to this page?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I did. Click again, and like, oh, there we are. And I've noticed that when that happens much more frequently, and even opening files that are local on the computer, like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And the thing I've found with that, or at least my ideas on it, is with computers specifically, and a lot of technology, I mean, there is, like what you were saying earlier, there is that electromagnetic connection because they are filled with all kinds of crystals. And we have an ability to resonate really well with all kinds of different materials and rocks, but crystals are one of those types that basically are really good at tuning in anything. Mm-hmm. And they're really good at changing the frequency. So, you know, you sit down and you're in a negative mood, and that computer picks up that little bit of negativity. You do that day after day after day after day. All of a sudden, you're tuning those crystals in that computer to be like, oh, we are negative. Well, what causes negativity? And then they want to continue to build that negativity because that's how they've been tuned. So they start making your experience less attractive on the computer. Therefore, you give more negativity. Therefore, it goes good feedback and all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah, picking up the vibration.
Yeah, that's a long explanation of longer explanation of what I. That's a kind of a long explanation, but anyway.
Well, I really enjoyed that question and those questions. So I really want to thank our listener for submitting those questions and letting us bounce off of that. There's greater references to all this conversations, previous conversations that we've had in the Law of Attraction episode, the Destiny episode, the episode we just did on symbolic manifestation, and the one that our most recent episode on vibrational matches and attractions. So yeah, I think there's actually two episodes on that. Vibrations.
Yeah. I think we ended one and then we're like, this is too good of a topic not to finish.
It was like part two. So I'm going to put the links to those in the show notes so that we can kind of point right there.
Okay. And yeah, I want to also say that the listeners said that they would prefer to be anonymous. So if you do submit feedback and you do not want your name mentioned, just let us know that you want to be anonymous. Otherwise, we'll be more than happy to give you credit when we mention you on the episode.
Yeah, I'll sew your name and use a bedazzler and put it on the back of my jacket. I promise. Unless you say don't, and then I'll just put anonymous on the back of my jacket.
No. We'll do like laser lights up in the sky. You know, you still live in Washington State, where you get clouds a lot more than, you know, if you get enough high power lasers, you could do a whole laser lights show.
Yeah, I guess that gets more attention than it does.
I'll let you go. Go on.
So for this week, we're going to do kind of a continuation of a theme that we've been doing as of late. We've taken separate topics that we've discussed, and we've kind of amalgamated it like we did with the life and death episode and like we did with the love and fear episode. We took those two topics and we made a single episode that actually compares the two and talks about how the two either work together or work against each other. So we've decided to do that on one of our two favorite topics that we discuss a lot, actually, that we constantly refer to in our episodes, and that would be reality and, yes, you guessed it, time. So Donald and I are going to actually talk about reality and time and how they actually connect and work together or how they don't work together, all that good stuff. Donald, of course, I'm going to throw it to you.
Go ahead
and give everyone your thoughts.
Well, I have to say that one of the things that we have, you and I have done specifically with reality and time as topics for episodes, is we've tried to avoid focusing on them specifically because we knew very much at the very beginning when we started this whole podcast that it's like, We could do episode after episode after episode on reality this and time that. So there was a little bit where we were specifically like, okay, if it comes up in an episode, that's all right. But we're not going to make a more, you know, episode after episode after episode about it. And I think for the most part, we've done pretty well. But yeah, I'm pretty excited because this, I mean, this is, it's like reality. Ooh, time. Ooh, even better. And one of the first thoughts I have when we're comparing the two and contrasting the two is, can one of them exist without the other? Can time exist without reality, or can reality exist without time?
What do you think?
I believe from our perspective, they are intrinsically intertwined. And the whole reason of that is because if we are doing any kind of observation, then we are having an experience, and that observation is happening over time, and that is creating our reality. So the combination of being able to observe anything and the length of time that we are able to observe is a time frame connects time and reality intricately for our experience. Now, if we take us out of the equation, can reality exist without time? I don't know. There's a part of me that says, no, it always happens. Kind of like the tree falling in the woods, does it make a sound? It's like, well, yeah, the tree always makes a sound because we know that big things hitting the ground make sound. So, but the philosophical part of me is saying, I don't know. Does it or doesn't it? So what do you think?
Well, if we look at the whole idea of a fourth dimension and a fifth dimension that talks about kind of a transcendence of space-time, that those two seem to always be interplayed, time-space and space-time, then we're talking about a series, like you said, a series of moments that are interconnected and interthreaded. And if you look at a tree falling in the forest, the tree is upright, the tree is on its way down, the tree is on the ground. If you could step outside of time, you could see the tree upright, the tree falling, and the tree down as being all the same thing. If there's no series of little frames like in a movie strip, how you have those still frames that are all threaded together, it's like looking at the three frames in one shot. It's if you step outside of time. You know what I'm saying? So the tree is falling, the tree is up, and the tree is down all at the same, in quotes, time.
So you're seeing all of that at the exact same moment.
Is right.
That kind of like what you're talking about with the like the old movie reels before they went to projectors, where they had the actual film that went around and around and around, basically taking three frames of that, blowing it up, and projecting it onto a screen at the same time, where the images of the tree standing up, the tree in midfall, and the tree on the ground are all presented on the screen at the same time, is kind of like being in a different fourth dimensional, fifth dimensional time frame, as opposed to how the movie would normally run, where it would show just the tree standing up, and then the tree halfway down, and then the tree falling on the ground. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, like they're superimposed in a way, but yet you can distinguish them as separate.
I don't understand.
Okay, well, you know, let's explore this because...
I see exactly what you're saying. And I made sure I did not listen to the previous episodes that we did on time and everything. And I understand exactly what you're saying. I understand how that would be how the perception would be with that example. The only thing is, I have a very strong difficulty moving that into anything other than that one example.
Okay.
And applying it to, you know, say life or the universe or everything.
Well, you know, yeah, that's the biggest challenge there, because we often hear in the either metaphysical community or the spiritual community or even the quantum community. I said community the first two times and I couldn't the third time. What was that all about?
I don't know. what reality are you in, man?
Yeah, that's the tree falling and the tree fell and the tree. Where is the tree?
The tree did not happen until someone observed it. Is the quantum community's idea?
Well, maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's. I mean, because in quantum mechanics, in quantum physics, the idea is that they reside in two places at once.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a series of probabilities, and you just Schrodinger's cat, pick one. And if that's the case, then if it's a series of probabilities and then one just happens to come into focus, then what's the idea of everything happening simultaneously and that there is no time and all that other stuff? Number one, why are we locked into the idea of saying, well, yes, there is time because we're human beings? And two, is there really a way of perceiving no time or simultaneous time from within a human perspective and really truly understand it?
The thing that caught me right there was experiencing no time. I don't know about you, but I think you may have done this at some point. You experience a length of time, but there was no experience of time, if that makes sense. In other words, to the rest of the world, time was still going on, but to you, you did not experience the passage or movement of time whatsoever. And the strongest and most oftentimes those experiences have happened with me is really, really, really deep meditation.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's actually quite awesome in a way, because when you get to that point, you're actually in such a deep mental state where hours could go by and you're just like, oh, okay, that felt like, well, that didn't feel like anything. Or you go in and you, when I was first learning to do certain types of meditation, it was just like, okay, we're calm, and like, I must have been meditating for at least 90 minutes. Get up, go into the other room, look at my watch. 23 minutes? Are you kidding me?
Well, yeah, and then that's the relativity of time, and I think that no time does that same thing. In fact, there's an experience shared by Natalie Sudman. She's the author of a book called Application of Impossible Things, subtitled A Near-Death Experience in Iraq. And she actually goes through her account, and her account of her near-death experience is very different from the standard, which is the idea that you go through the white light in the tunnel and you meet all these people, da-da-da. You know, that's the standard NDE that we hear about.
Oh, yeah.
Hers was not like that. Hers was, yeah, I know, I've heard them, seen those before. But mine was basically, okay, I got hit by a roadside bomb by an IDE. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I got hit by a roadside bomb. And next thing I know, I'm standing in front of this community of entities. I'm just standing there in front of them, and we're doing this kind of, and they're all discussing my life and what I was going to do, da 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 da. After that, they said they needed her to go into a healing because she didn't want to go back. She's like, I'm not going back there. Not that she was upset by the experiences that she had, because it was more like, I don't want to bother, because it just seems like it's going to be a drudgery. If I survive this roadside bomb, what am I going to be like? It's just going to be a chore, and I just don't feel like doing that. And they're like, well, it's your choice, okay? Let's see if we can talk about this a little bit. And they do, and then she goes into this healing. And when she goes into the healing, she described it as being isolated but with everything at the same time. And she said that it felt as if it took centuries. It also felt as if it took a moment.
Huh.
And all of this stuff. And then she went back and worked with other entities to help heal her body to survive this blast. And they played with her body and did all sorts of different things and figured, okay, so what if we do this? What if we make her blind? Ha ha, completely. Ha ha ha. No, seriously, that's how she describes it. It's kind of bizarre. Oh, wow. And then
like doing a D&D character is like, okay, your character is hit by a roadside bomb. Roll to see how you survive. You know?
And yeah, I know, but there it was really more deliberate. They deliberately decided how she would survive and what damage she would take based on the experiences that she wanted to have through the particular damages. So what's interesting about that is it is like that no time thing that you talked about, where she said, yeah, I experienced centuries on one hand, I experienced a moment on the other hand, but it felt like the same thing to me. So she was in that no time, in that healing place.
Oh, yeah. And that's what we're talking about, where the different dimensions have different perceptions of time. And what you're mentioning earlier, and what we've talked about in previous episodes on time, is perception of time changes when we move to different areas. And if you want proof of that, just experience time, the passage of time, and how you perceive it when you do different activities here in the third third-dimensional physical plane in the physical body, I mean, there are some things that we do that, you know, we really enjoy, we're having a great time, and all of a sudden the passage of time is perceived to go by very quickly, where, you know, hours can go by and they seem like hardly any time at all. Whereas other things like, oh, I'm going to use one of the ones that people love to do, especially in American culture, is standing in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles. You know, oftentimes that experience can feel like the passage of time is going so slowly. I find it interesting that time can be malleable, can be moved around, can be sped up or slowed down a little bit, especially with our perception. And I think even to a degree for us as well. For example, if you want to speed up time around you, you can. Or if you want to slow down time around you, you can. To my experience, it takes a lot of work. But you can actually start to see...
It doesn't take as much work as you think. Okay. It seems like it does at first, but what I'll do is I'll go to like the Department of Motor Vehicles. I'm like, ooh, great opportunity to just meditate. And the thing is I have this expression. I don't know if I've used it in a previous episode, but for people who are impatient, things take longer, and for people who are patient, things go quicker. And it's not by default. It's a matter of how your perspective is. When you're impatient, you make time slow down just by your impatience. In fact, I've done that. But I've been like, oh, come on, come on, come on. And then I'll say, you know what? Never mind. I'm just going to ignore that. And next thing I know, it's already done. Remember our guest, Lisa Clark?
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to her today, and she's going on vacation next week.
Ooh.
And I said to her, I said, you know, the closer you are to vacation is proportionate to how much time slows down. The closer you get, the more time slows down as you approach your vacation time.
Because it's that anticipation, right?
Oh, sure, exactly. But, you know, here's what I wonder about that whole idea of our perception of time and how we control the flow of time. Lately, I will be thinking about something, and I swear I was not in the room. I was wherever I was thinking about it. This is happening a few times as of late. It happens a lot here and there, but for some reason, a few times as of late, I was thinking about something, and then I realized, you know how you get lost in thought?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it takes you away. I felt like I was taken away, that I didn't remember what was in front of me just for a moment when I was thinking of something else. I was that far removed from my point of focus. So I wonder if the physical body is almost like a bungee cord. Because how often have you daydreamed, whether you reminisce or whether you're just kind of fantasizing about a future event? Well, what if maybe this goes this way? Or like in Lisa's case, maybe she's thinking about laying on the beach somewhere. And so you get caught up in that daydream, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you're peeling carrots in the meantime, da 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 da. When you're asleep, when you're dreaming, and I don't know if we talked a little bit about this in the dreaming episode.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dreaming, you seem to be able to have license to kind of go and do and be wherever you want until you wake up. Well, when you're awake, maybe you're trying to go and do and be wherever you want, and you kind of come in and out of time. But then you get bungee cord back because you're stuck to the physical. The physical is just this big magnet. It's that magnetic pull that creates a propulsion of the perception of linear time.
Ah,
of time happening in an order.
You said so many things there that I want to comment on, and I will do my best to do so in a timely and succinct fashion, because you know me, I do have a tendency to get very verbose and very talkative. But one of the things,
I don't.
Well, yeah, I know. But one of the things that that has been happening for me too, like you were saying, thinking about something and being in a almost like your consciousness is literally being there. In the past couple of years, there have been times where I'll be on the computer reading an article or reading something, and all of a sudden it'll trigger a thought of, oh, I wonder what that's like. And then all of a sudden there's this experience that happens in literally a maybe a few seconds. And then all of a sudden, like that bungee cord that you were talking about of the physical body, you know, I was like, I shake my head. I'm like, oh, I'm reading. Where do we stop reading? And all of a sudden I'm, you know, shot right back into, oh, what am I doing? I am reading an article on the computer, and I was mid-sentence in this part right here before I went off and to this little daydream right here that happened. And I was like, oh, good to know I'm not the only one that happens to. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I'm working with very specifically, more so than I've done in the past with this year, is I am planning out projects and ideas with a specific time frame that I want to happen, specific months and specific dates throughout the year 2013. And what I find happening is when I think about these things, or some of these projects, some of the pieces of these projects, it seems like I'm throwing out the reality of that experience into a future point, and then all I'm having to do is just move into that experience, if that makes sense.
It does.
Kind of like people, rock climbers, you know, they put a spike into the mountain, and then they have to pull themselves up to that spike, and then they have to reach up and put another spike in the mountain, and then pull themselves into that, up to that spike. And for me, for this year, that's kind of what I'm doing. Is, you know, I've reached up, I've already put a spike in there, in the mountain, I can see it, and now all I'm having to do is, through the passage of time, pull myself into, or up to that spike, so I can do another one. And it's actually really kind of exciting, because there is a point where my vibration is starting to sync up from where I am now to where I'm going. Mm-hmm. And so that I can be a vibrational match for that, so that it's more realistic, of it has more of a chance of happening in reality.
You know what that reminds me of?
Oh,
and
go ahead.
Tell me if we've talked about this before. Did we talk about the study that they did on people taking tests? They did some study about people taking tests that they would have the people review the test and read the test and study the answers after having taken it, compared to people who didn't do that. And the people who had reviewed and studied the answers that they, the correct answers for the test, after they already took the test, did better than those who didn't.
Oh, yeah, we did mention that.
I wish I remember what episode it was in. Maybe it was Time, the episode, I don't know. Nonetheless, it's saying that we are affecting the past from the future.
Oh, yeah, and I think possibly in that same episode, they've also done a lot of research with jet fighter pilots when they're doing dogfights. You know,
oh, yeah, that's right. I remember us talking about that.
Yeah, where fighter pilots a lot of times say, I went left because I knew that he was about to move left just before the jet in front of him moved left. And they're saying, yeah, they're actually foretelling the future of what this person in front of them is going to do. milliseconds, you know, not minutes before, but, you know, a millisecond here, a millisecond there before they do it. And then they're reacting to that immediately. So I do remember that from talking about that from previous episodes, and I have no idea which ones.
I wonder if it was the time travel episode.
Ah, interesting.
It could have been that, because when we did a whole episode on time travel.
Did we actually do time travel?
Yeah, we sure did.
That was a long time ago.
What did I tell someone? I told someone at work the other day, I said, somebody said, yeah, you know, only if I could just go back in time and do that together. I said, well, you know, I had a time machine. And I said that, but it was stolen. I said, but, you know, then again, you know, we did find it like a couple of years ago. I said, but it was stolen yesterday.
So. That's one of the things I saw online recently is like, if you're reading this, then I have gone back. I have found a time machine and gone back in time and stopped World War II.
I've seen that one. That's actually pretty clever.
And I'm like, cool. I read that and I'm like, oh, that's just perfect right there. It's witty. It's clever. It's just like, there it is.
But, I love the, what do we want? Time travel. When do we want it irrelevant?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Something kind of made me think, and we, I think we also, since we're referencing previous episodes left and right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've done, you know, almost 75 episodes, so there's a lot of stuff we've covered, so it's kind of fun to kind of point back to some of the episodes that we've done. But I want to say it was in the Human Evolution episode. We kind of touched on this a little bit, but I was reading this article, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and it talked about this, you know, the sun calendars, kind of like Stonehenge is, and there's tons of them all over the place. They found one, and it was some, I want to say someplace in Africa, and I'll definitely post a show note to this, that they dated 75,000 years old.
Really? Wow.
So that's telling you that the human perception of measuring the sun and watching the sun and measuring time by it, and they look at these things, and these stones are lined up with the solstice and these different cosmic events. It tells us that 75,000 years ago. Now, is it where we are today that has kind of brought that into existence? Did we discover it, or did it manifest? Did we kind of jump into the same timeline as it? And that's when I think, you know, that's when it seems to me very, very more plausible that things all happen at the same time.
75,000 years, the solstices and everything would be significantly different than they would be today.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my goodness, 75,000 years, that is such a long time. The human, the physical human, as we know today, has changed so much over that time. I mean, That's almost unfathomable.
Right. But then again, we think we know only by a preponderance of evidence the existence of human beings. We say that writing only goes back, what, 10,000 years or something like that?
Yeah.
And then we say that really humans that we barely recognize, the very first versions of humans, are maybe 100,000 years old or something like that. And we couldn't conceive that human beings really had that kind of perceptual awareness of their environment only, you know, 75,000 years ago. But we don't know what kind of human beings were here at the 75,000 years ago.
Were any human beings here?
Yeah, there may have been, there may not have been. But again, with our, with our current science myopia, with our narrow-mindedness of empirical evidence-based science, if you have no evidence for it, it did not exist.
Mm.
But there are so many things that there could never be evidence for, that just because there's no evidence for it, how do you know it didn't exist? You see?
And this is part of reality that I'm pretty sure we talked about it in episode 14. I think it was episode 14, nonlinear creation.
Right.
And the reason why that's one of the few numbers I actually remember, the episode number 4, and is because that was just one of those episodes that was just like, oh wow, you have a concept of this idea too, and I can just see it now. Like, we'll go back and like, episode, dude, Donald, that was episode 13, not 14. Like, all right, I've got, anyway, but the whole idea that by finding a bone that is much larger than anything that they can think of, the person that found it, all of a sudden creating this thought, having this idea of, well, this bone has to fit into an animal, and it has to fit into a very large animal.
Right.
Well, lizards get really large. Oh, it must have been a really large lizard. What would a lizard look like that is that large? And then all of a sudden, that thought, that story, that idea being thrown back into time, creating all the dinosaurs.
Sure. It's like us constructing the past from just a little piece of evidence.
Yeah, because the thing is, if you have physical evidence in the now, then the universe wants to make sure that your concept of reality holds true, or else it starts ripping away, and then you go mad, and it's not fun to do that most of the time, from what I hear. But
go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say that when you have a concept, when you have an idea that is so strongly held, that you can create the past that affects the future, even to the extent of creating dinosaurs that before you had that idea did not exist.
I think it's a buy-in thing.
Oh, really?
I think that the reality and the time, how they interplay together to make a more, let's say, concrete reality, or as I like to say, consensus reality, is about how much buy-in you get. And I say that because, okay, first of all, here's how subjective everything is. Everything is so ridiculously subjective. And here's how it is so ridiculously subjective. Think of an event. Just think of a very simple event in your past. Very simple. One little event.
I went to get sushi.
Okay, you went to get sushi. Now, when you remember that event, you went to get sushi.
Mm-hmm.
That event is never the same event ever, ever, ever. I mean, there are people that say there's an ultimate reality. A friend of mine says that there is this ultimate reality where everything actually happens concretely. And I disbelieve that, because if you think about that time you got sushi, every time you think about that exact same event, it's a different thought of that event. You might be thinking of it in a different way. Even if you think about, even if you think about the exact same thing, which is what you ordered, let's say what you ordered and what it tastes like. Just the fact that you thought about it on February 9th versus when you thought about it on August 24th. You thought about it at two different times in your life. So just because you're different at those two different times in your life, even if you think about the same event in the same way, they're actually different events because they're two different memories occurring. It's the same memory but occurring at two different times, which makes them two different memories.
Okay. Yeah. That's a big stretch right there, but I see where you're going. I see what you're saying right there.
So now what you do is you say, well, if everything's subjective, again, we've talked about this before, but each of us may remember an event the same, but we remember different events in different ways. So what happens is when we start to agree on an event, the more people you get to agree on an event, the more you can actually cement it into reality. And I think that's how people, number one, that's how science works here in our day and age. Science is magic as far as everything's concerned. But yet we look at the pyramids and go, well, how do they do that? Well, they didn't roll them on a bunch of logs, of course. These big giant, several tons and tons and tons of blocks with a bunch of slaves. We're sitting there going, yeah, right. And then science says, explain it. Well, this is our best guess. And their best guess sounds just ridiculous. But yet nobody can explain it. And some people say, well, they used levitation. Well, why couldn't they have used levitation? If you have enough people that believe and understand the power of levitation and can work together to create the consensus reality of the idea of moving objects and blocks using either magnetics or sounds or a combination of that or whatever they did, then that's what gives it the reality. But it's only reality because you got everybody to agree with it.
And even saying, even saying the word levitation, most of us say, when we say the word levitation, we have this instant image of people, on the street levitating above with nothing below them and nothing above them. And it's like, oh, it's magic. Well, if we take the same idea back 150 years ago where we say we're talking to somebody clear across the world instantly right now, like, that's telepathy. No, that's telecommunications.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, all of a sudden it's like, that's crazy, man. Well, maybe the idea of what you're saying with levitation is not like, ooh, I'm levitating off the concrete because I'm just that awesome and everything. It may have been some form of technology, kind of like what we have with the telephone and everything like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, what if in the future you had people that found these Wi-Fi receivers, but there was no electricity? And they said, well, these people communicated over vast different distances. Like, for example, say you find a hard drive, but there's no way to read the hard drive. It's just a bunch of ones and zeros. We say, well, they use the idea of these little crystals or electrical charges or whatever they want to call it. But there's no way to translate and interpret it. We would say, how did they do that? How were they able to talk about across and communicate across these mass distances? Well, then they say, well, it's just magic. And then they try to explain it in whatever equivalent technology they have in their time, or what they even see as evidence of technology at our time that actually they can understand. So I think that yeah, to affect a reality, to affect a past, and to affect time, I think that the more people you can get to agree on how reality can be, or how reality should be, or how reality is, will actually make it more, in quotes, real.
Kind of like a mass consciousness type thing.
Yeah, like a mass consciousness type thing.
So if I understand what you're saying, is the more people that buy into an idea, the more likely that idea becomes comes into the mass reality of those that are buying into it and those that are surrounded by them. Is that correct?
I think to a degree. I think where that breaks down is it's a sum total game is what it is. So it's like, if you get a lot of people to buy into an idea, what if a lot of other people, or maybe the same number of people, buy into a completely different idea? And eventually those two ideas are going to clash, but they will create a bigger reality that's probably harder for us to see.
Oh, that's like political, a political race.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot like that. Yeah, it's a lot like these opposing, polarized views. Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking when you were describing that is the harmonic convergence back in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And what that probably set in motion for a lot of people, and not only that, the effects that it has, that it's had up to this point right now. Because it's interesting, before we started this podcast, I had not really done a lot of searching into the harmonic convergence. I was like, oh, it was some major world meditation that happened back in 1987. I was like, okay, that's cool. And then from some of the information that's come up through just our discussions and whatnot, I started piecing together a couple things. I'm like, oh, 1987, that would be about the year, that'd be almost the exact year where I really, really, really started to get interested in metaphysics and paranormal and all this stuff. And before then, it was just like, it may have been there, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But 1987, it was just like, that's when I started really wanting to get the Belief in the Unknown series from Time Life Books. That's when I really became interested in psychic phenomena and things of that nature. And I'm sitting here going, well, if there are hundreds of thousands of people around the world that are doing this mass meditation at the same time, that's going to have overflow into the consciousness of everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Then we look at what we have right now, 25 years later, we are so much more connected to people on so many more levels than we were 25 years ago, where we can instantly know anything about anybody any time of the day.
Right.
Whereas 25 years ago, it might take a little while. Some major event happens in the world, and if we don't hear about it on the radio, we probably have to watch the nightly news, because cable was just still a fairly new thing, and this was way before this was a few years before the internet really took off. So it might be a few days before you hear it or see it, unless you heard it on the radio, saw it in the newscast, or read it in the paper. Whereas now, something happens, and if you're connected at all to social media, you can hear about it within a few minutes. And I'm thinking, if the harmonic convergence that was done back in 1987 and other meditations like that that have been done throughout the years, it's just bumping up this this vibration of the human consciousness, the human reality. We are getting to that point where we are ascending in the same idea of what the mass consciousness has believed ascension looks like over the past 25 years.
I think it's a 100 monkey thing. I think it's a threshold idea.
Okay.
Once we hit kind of a certain level as far as people, as individuals, and en masse, this level of awareness, of self-awareness, of awareness of just kind of who we are and what we're capable of as far as human beings, just our intense creative power, it's a recognition. And I think when we get the population to a certain point, at a certain number, at a certain level, that you get enough consensus reality, enough people kind of agreeing that, yeah, human beings are this amazingly evolved, this amazingly self-aware and creative creature and creative being, creative, I don't know, consciousness. I think once we kind of recognize, it's like recognizing our consciousness in stages, and you get enough people to do that, it kind of, it's like it knocks over the next domino to get the next phase started, which is what I think the harmonic convergence was. It was a domino knocking over that enough. It was like, okay, we've hit this point in consciousness. Yeah, now it's like we can go on to the next round, as it were, or the next level, or the next phase. And our perception of time is really, really going to shift. And let me restate that. It has been and is shifting. We've played with our perception of time so much. I mean, think about it. All you have to do for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, for centuries, we had nothing but printed material to record time. Now what we could do is we can capture a photo of a person's face. And that's a still image that consensus reality that everybody looks at that. Granted, you may see something different, so it's subjective there, but the objective part or the consensus reality part is that this photo has captured this image in time, a slice of time, which we couldn't even do 250 years ago. It's part of reality. But we've played with time. We've been able to do that. This recording is going to be heard by people. They're going to hear the exact same things that we were saying a couple of weeks from now, and a couple of months from now, and a couple of years from now. We've taken this little tiny subset of reality that you and I are creating here, and we've preserved it in this little tiny bubble of time. So you're going to hear our real voices projected into the future. And that's not something we could do 300 years ago. So not our technology is basically us having the capability of playing with time in ways that we were never able to before. And that's one of the things that I think has been our advance of consciousness, is our advance of our time perception. Without the perception of time that we have now, we would not, is the reason we've not been able to do things in the past, because our perception of time has changed inherently.
Oh yeah. And just to add on to what you were talking about, this episode is not able to be perceived or heard by people that don't understand current technology, or that don't accept current technology as a mass consciousness. Kind of like, for example, if you don't have a concept of audio recording and holding on to someone's voice and then carrying that voice to a different place or a different time, then you most likely won't be able to hear this this podcast. You won't be able to hear this episode, because there is part of our reality is having a consensus that things happen a certain way.
Right.
To a degree. I mean, there is a point where that starts to fall apart once somebody has the idea, you know. And that's mm-hmm. why ideas are so important, because one idea can change the world, can change reality, can, you know, manipulate time, can create tons of anything.
Right.
And I
think the ideas themselves are pulled out of the no time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe that. In fact, there's I can't remember what, it's a document I read. I wish I remember the name of it now. But they're talking about, if you're working on a problem and you cannot figure out that problem, the best thing to do is just go space out.
Mm.
Space out, where you just sit there and your mind just goes into nothing and you just drift. And that answer will come to you. The idea is that all the information that we could ever, ever want, everything that the universe is and was and will be, we already know. We know the answers to every single thing in the world. But what we have to do is step outside of our own physical awareness to be able to access that answer. Some people call it the Akashic Records. Some people just call it just the all that is. But whatever it is, everything is at our access. And I think that when you talk about ideas, that's what we're doing. We're going into the no time and we're finding that idea where it can be real because it's outside of reality. So there's no parameters or limits or constraints on it. It's real in the no real. And I think we just bring it into the reality.
Yeah, I just had an interesting thought that I want to share with you, because what you're talking about is everything that can ever happen, can ever possibly happen, is already happened and is happening in the, you know, it is. So one of the things that I find really interesting with that is that episodes of, you know, Take the Red Pill that we have not even conceived of yet are being heard by hundreds of thousands of people at some point in the future. They're having thoughts that are resonating back through time, creating the reality of the of what we say and how we say it, and creating the reality of, oh, this is a podcast and this is how, you know, Donald and David do things. Whereas I think when I think what happens is when you first start something, like when we first started this podcast, there were certain things that we didn't do that we definitely do now, because what we did is we fell into a groove that felt really good and seemed to work really well. Whereas with the first few episodes, it's like hit record and let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like now it's like, for the most part, you introduce the topic and then you throw it over to me, and then I start it off and then you comment, and it goes back and forth like that. We fell into that groove, and maybe the possibility of hundreds of thousands of people listening to this podcast in the future became more comfortable with the way that the format that we started, that we eventually came to. And it just took those first couple episodes to birth it into reality. It's like, oh, here's an idea. Here's a concept. Okay. A few hundred people are like, you know, I think this would go a lot better if David Deere opened up with the topic and then threw it over to Donald Dalton to see what would happen. I wonder what that'd be like. Oh, yeah, that works much better. And all of a sudden they heard one episode or one piece where that's what we did. And like, oh, yeah, that works so much better. They should do that more often. And that thought resonated back through time and now has become a reality of the show.
Yeah, it's possible. It's quite possible. But does it resonate back? It just resonates back from our own perception. I wonder if it is like, think about your life. If everything simultaneously happens at once, maybe things aren't necessarily resonating back. They're just resonating in the direction that they just happen to go. You see what I'm saying?
You might need to clarify that just a little bit.
Let's talk about it like this. Let's say that every moment of your life, it's a series of moments, a series of little snapshots. What if before you're born, let's say the whole self that is about to dive into your incarnation of Donald is given a series of moments? It's given a big basket of a bunch of moments and says, all right, the thing is to have this experience, you've got to look in the basket and find the moments and put them in chronological order, because the moments already exist in this big basket. It's your job to put them in chronological order. So what you do is you say, okay, this is the event I want to have. So what you do is you pull out event from the age of 37. And you say, okay, this is the event I'm going to have. And then what you have to do is you have to go and look through the basket. And you have to find the age of 2 and the age of 16 and the age of 21 that makes 37 a reality. So you put 37 in place, and then you're like, oh, well, shoot, I've got to do this. I've got to go and put it, here's the age of 2 to make 37 happen. There's 16 to make 37. And you start putting them in order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to 36, you're just like, I like this 36. This 36 is required to make this 37 happen, 37A. But 36A is required for 37A. But you say, but I like 36D better.
Mm-hmm.
Which would mean I'm going to have a 37D. Well, you have to go back and you have to go and have, now you, instead of working with the age of 2 and age of 16, all of the A's, you have to work with H4B and 13D and 15D. But every time you do that, what you're doing is you're just shifting your memory back into that experience. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's like you've changed your memory of everything that's happened up to 37 beforehand is all what you remember from that point backwards.
Hmm.
If you chose a different path, all your memories would be completely different. And your memories keep changing. It just doesn't seem like it to you, because you've experienced them in this whole drawn out long linear order.
Or, you know, we want to take that, add the little thing of 36A and 36D and C and happened. So 37 years old at 37A, B, C, D, and E, all those happened. And sometimes our perception crosses over to from 37D to 36A or something like that. And we see what would have happened in an alternate timeline because they're so close to each other. And it's like, oh, there's like a parallel possibility right there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's how the psychics do it.
Oh, yeah. And then once you, if you're able to peer into an alternate possibility, even if it's just a few days or a few weeks or a few months or even just a few moments ahead, you can change the whole course of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability... literally creates your reality through the whole time of whole perception of time of your physical existence in this third dimensional reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a time jumping thing. It's a probability jumping thing.
So we're all time lords in the Doctor Who universe.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, your geek card has just been revoked. Sorry.
Yeah, it has. It has. I'm not a Doctor Who fan. I mean, I could talk about, you know, the first 5-6 books of Dune ad infinitum, but yeah, Doctor Who, I'm lost on. I'm like, Doctor Who?
Oh.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you should watch the first season of the reboot from 2005.
You lost me at should.
Oh, David, you know, you've been wanting to get a little bit of feedback from people now. Everybody that is like, David hasn't seen Doctor Who, any Doctor Who. He doesn't know who Doctor Who is. Ah, you're probably going to get a lot more feedback of David. Watch Doctor Who. Just a few episodes. Trust me, you'll love it. It'll be awesome.
Okay. Hey, if it's feedback, I welcome feedback in any shape, way, shape, or form. So
oh, I know.
Works for me.
Oh, okay, I know you've heard the Doctor Who. You have an idea. It's like, oh, okay, Doctor Who, guy who travels through time in a box. Gotcha. That may be the whole extent that you know of it. But to me, that's not knowing anything more of something that is that culturally, in my opinion, significant. Is like, so what's this whole story about? Charles Dickens and was visited by three ghosts, and it's like. It's just something you know, but I'll give you a little bit of credit for this time because I'm just curious to see how much feedback we actually get from you not knowing who Doctor Who is.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I say any Doctor Who fans out there, please kind of give your two bits. And then actually I would say tell us what you think of as far as the episodes that we've done and kind of how they feel and tie to some of the stuff that you've watched in Doctor Who and some of the ideas that kind of come through in their storylines and give us a feedback on how that influence has kind of worked into your life as far as kind of being a fan of this episode and being a fan of Doctor Who.
Or some of the possibilities that it has created and that has allowed you to move, you know, possibly create a different kind of reality for you, even if it's minute.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious.
So I think that's going to wrap this episode up really nicely.
Cool.
I love talking about time and reality.
Oh, I know. It's a blast. It's where our brains thoroughly stretch. And then what I do is I just eat a bowl of soup and watch TV afterwards because that's all I can do.
You should go on to Netflix and watch some episodes of Doctor Who.
No, that's not going to happen. My television commitment's already – my dance card is full for – what I've committed to for television, I don't have room for anymore.
I know.
Otherwise, that's all I would do, watch TV, and I can't do that.
Well, you could, but the consequences.
Could, but then it would get in the way of the things that I want to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have no issue with people watching television or the idea of watching television, but there's just other things that I want to do.
Okay. I'll let you go on that for right now. I'll probably tease you about it in future episodes. But
plus, the other thing, too, is I've got to be a Doctor Who virgin, as it were, so that I can have the non-influenced perspective.
Okay. I'll let you go with that. I'll let you go with that if you really want to present it that way, Dave.
I had to try.
I'll let you go with that however you want it to be. But David and I would definitely like to thank you for listening to this episode, and we hope you've enjoyed it. If this is your first episode that you've listened to, we still hope you've enjoyed it. If this is one of the episodes, if you're a longtime listener, we hope that we've continued to bring you mind-stretching thoughts of entertainment and ideas and philosophies and concepts that really just give you that what if kind of thing.
The head scratchers.
Yeah, the head scratchers. Yeah.
And we did discuss a lot of episodes that we had referred to a lot of these concepts to in the past. Our show notes are going to have all those episodes that we refer to, as well as some ideas that kind of take some further exploring on in the realms of the internet. You can find those on our website at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. You can also find all of our previous episodes there. You can download them also through iTunes, and through iTunes you can leave us a review. From our website, you can link to send us email, send us questions, send us comments, send us feedback. We love it. And actually, like us on Facebook. It's TTRP Podcast.
Awesome. Awesome. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you to take time to create your reality.
Oh, nice. And I'm David Deere. Be real. It's all in good time.